The news that Vermont Senator Jim Jeffords is switching parties overshadowed what should have been a big victory celebration for President Bush. His $1.35 trillion tax cut passed the Senate this week. Soon it will be on his desk for a signature. No piece of legislation is as important to the president's agenda as the tax cut. And no one person outside of Congress had more to do with getting it passed than a conservative activist named Grover Norquist. Norquist has been organizing the fight for tax cuts and other conservative causes for the better part of two decades here in Washington. NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson reports.
Every Wednesday morning, about 100 conservative activists gather in the offices of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover Norquist chairs the meeting. With his furry brown beard and cherubic face, he looks more like a teddy bear than a conservative revolutionary.
Okay, folks, we want to get started. We have a fun-filled, action-packed meeting today. A couple of quick things. Obviously, today we're going to go back at the tax bill.
If you believe in a vast right-wing conspiracy, this is its clubhouse. There are representatives here from pro-life groups, homeschoolers, property rights activists, gun owners, and tax cutters. And these days, there is always a representative from the Bush White House. Tim Gagelein is President Bush's Deputy Director of Public Liaison.
I attend Grover Norquist's meeting at least twice and sometimes three times a month. And the reason I go is because I am specifically tasked in the White House with outreach to conservatives. And I make it a point to make sure that the conservative community, understands exactly what the president's message is, and to make sure that I bring from those meetings thoughts from the groups and individuals back to the White House.
If the White House was guilty of dissing moderate Republican Jim Jeffords, helping to drive him out of the party, it certainly hasn't made that mistake with Grover Norquist. The president's chief political strategist, Karl Rove, has made a point of cultivating Norquist, working closely with him and his coalition on every aspect of the Bush agenda. Norquist, who was in the College Republicans with Rove 20 years ago, says George W. Bush understands in his gut the importance of maintaining strong ties with the conservative base, something George Herbert Walker Bush failed to do.
George W. Bush grew up a different generation than his father. The movement was more useful and constructive, less whiny than his father knew it to be, and therefore there's a much stronger bond, whereas there was zero bond before.
In the past, conservatives often criticized Republican presidents for not doing enough. But Norquist's coalition is 100% on board. And that's the prime example of how well this White House has done with the conservative base. Norquist says it's also evidence that the movement itself has grown up.
When Reagan came to Washington, he was almost the only Reaganite in town. When George W. Bush came in, there was a town full of Reaganites at the airport greeting him. And when he says, I think we ought to do X, there are institutions and newsletters and magazines and think tanks and whole trade associations that go, boy, yes, and we have that written up.
The people at Grover Norquist's Wednesday meetings all have different interests, but the glue that holds this coalition together is tax cuts. Norquist has been toiling away for tax cuts for a long time. He invented the No New Taxes pledge that's now considered a political requirement for candidates in many parts of the country. He helped mastermind Newt Gingrich's Contract with America, and he helped popularize the Republicans' new name for the estate tax, the death tax.
When you think about Grover's influence on the conservative movement, you would really have to say that Grover Norquist is the Ralph Nader of the right.
Stephen Moore is the president of the Club for Growth, which supports conservative Republican candidates in primary challenges against other Republicans it considers too moderate.
Right often fails because we tend to find ourselves in circular firing squads. And what Grover says quite correctly is, look, folks, at least if we're going to be in a circular firing squad, let's put Dick Gephardt in the middle. And that's the kind of tactician that he is.
More important than anything Grover Norquist did at the grassroots in the fight for the Bush tax cut was what he did inside the Beltway. He kept conservatives unified. Many Republican groups got nothing at all in this tax bill. There were no business tax breaks, for instance. But Norquist convinced K Street to hold its fire, all the while working closely with the White House. Too closely, say Norquist's critics. Some conservatives say Norquist has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the Bush White House, a partisan Republican first and a principled conservative second. Stephen Moore.
Some people think that he's maybe too rah-rah Republican. Sometimes a group like ours says, well, Grover, should we really call this a victory when we've given up, say, key elements of what we wanted? And Grover's attitude is always, as long as we're moving the ball up the football field, then we're winning. Some of us would like to go for the long bomb every once in a while.
Norquist insists he's still a conservative revolutionary, but a pragmatic one with a long-term strategy. And he has an answer for conservatives who are frustrated that the estate tax didn't disappear faster or that the president didn't fight harder for vouchers in his education bill.
One of the signs of maturity on the right is that you don't ask a president to win votes that's not there. My job is to get the death tax ready for repeal, to have the votes in the House and Senate for repeal, and to make the world safe for a president to cheerfully sign it so that he's proud and happy to sign it. It's a political winner for him to sign it. We should only be asking Bush to do those things in the next 4 or 8 years that we have opened the ground for. That's our job.
Even his opponents acknowledge Norquist's effectiveness. Longtime civil rights activist Ralph Nies thinks Norquist's ideas are wrong and dangerous, and that the Bush tax cut would starve support for Social Security, Medicare, and education. Nies runs a progressive coalition that tried and failed to stop the Bush tax plan.
I admire him for a number of reasons. He's a tenacious advocate. He's articulate. He knows where he wants to go and how to get there and with whom to work. And as opposed to a George W. Bush, who speaks of compassionate conservatism, who speaks in the rhetoric of moderation while pursuing a right-wing agenda, Grover is up front. He tells exactly what he means.
And Norquist is very clear about what's at stake in the tax cut debate.
The central question in American politics is the size of government. It's going to get bigger or smaller. Of the resources that you and your family put together, more of it go to the state or more of it stay with you?
When the tax cut is enacted, Grover Norquist says, there will be much less money available to the government, fewer resources that the state can use to bother the members of what Norquist calls the Leave Us Alone Coalition. Grover Norquist's long-term goal is simple and very radical. He wants to cut the size of government in half over the next 25 years. That's a serious and reasonable goal, he says, and one he's willing to advance with as blunt a metaphor as possible.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Yesterday, when the White House was still in shock from the news about Jim Jeffords' party switch, Grover Norquist didn't miss a beat. In the morning, he was on Capitol Hill, giving a pep talk to a group of conservative Senate staffers and laying out his strategy for taking the Senate back in 2002. It's not fun being in the minority, he told them, but losing control will only activate the conservative base. For Grover Norquist, happy warrior of the right, it's always easier to be in the opposition. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.